So we are now well along in seeing a little bit of what the architecture of the tree is becoming. It's no longer quite as simple as 10 empty circles. A lot of things have happened since we began. And now I'm going to show you another entire construction, another way, another arrangement, another way that Sephiroth are connected that will give you a whole new slant on things. So what I would like you to do is to take out the fourth Tree of Life diagram, a fresh one. What we're going to see now is how the three pillars take this number three and the implications of the number three a long step further. The three pillars between them create what are called the three triads. A triad is spelled T as in Thomas, R-I-A-D-S. We're going to look at those three triads now, and these add a whole new level of concept and sophistication, and they're a major step in creating the universe that we know. So what I want you to do now is I'm going to ask you to label the Sephiroth again, and this time when you label them, I want you to put the number of the Sephiroth in the center of the circle. Don't worry about names, just put in the numbers. So start with 1, go, you know, do what you usually do, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Put the numbers where they belong. Is anybody not finished yet? Okay, good. Now I'm going to have you connect them with lines, the way we did with the pillars. And I'll tell you exactly how I want you to do it. Listen carefully before you draw, because you need to know where to put these things properly. The first thing you're going to do is to draw a diagonal line that connects Sephiroth number 1 with number 2. Now draw a line that connects Sephiroth number 1 with number 3, a diagonal line on the left. Now draw a line between Sephiroth number 2 and number 3, crossing the tree from right to left. And you'll see that you've created a triangle at the top of the tree. That's the first triad. Now I want you to draw a line, a long horizontal line across the tree between 4 and 5, between the right-hand side and the left-hand side. And then draw a diagonal from number 4 to number 6 in the middle. And draw another diagonal from number 5 to number 6. Now we have a triangle, another triangle, the second triad, and you'll notice that it is a downward-pointing triangle where the first one was an upward-pointing triangle. That's the second triad. Let's go down again to the lower part of the tree, and I want you to draw a line horizontally across the tree from left to right, from number 7 to number 8. Now draw a line from the right-hand side of the tree to the middle, from number 7 to number 9. And another diagonal from the left hand to the middle, which is from number 8 to number 9. And you'll see that you've created another downward-pointing triad. There are now three of them. You'll notice that Malkuth is not included in the triads, and that's for a good reason. Now I'm going to tell you what these triads are called and what they're about. The first triad is called the Supernal Triad. It has a name, and it's spelled for ease of spelling. S as in Sam, U, P as in Peter, E, R, N as in Nancy, A, L, Supernal Triad. Supernal actually means, it literally means from above. It's the triad above, and literally represents the world of above in that old phrase, as above, so below. Mm-hmm. The Supernal Triad is the world of above. It is the abstract template for the rest of the universe. It has very, very few visible aspects, very few attributions. It is mostly structure. It tells us about force and form and mildness. It tells us about expansion and contraction. It tells us all of the things that the pillars are made of. And it's colorless, transparent. There are actually varying kinds of ways in which the Sephirot can be colored depending on things that we haven't talked about yet. But for our purposes here, I'm going to call the supernal triad colorless, with the exception that Keter is usually understood to be white. Chochmah, Sephira number 2, is usually understood to be gray, and Bina, on the left-hand side of the tree, is black. So you have white, gray, and black, which are themselves really not colors. Be aware that there are other color schemes that we haven't talked about yet, but for our purposes, we're going to use this one.
Chochmah is gray, and Bina is black.
So we have white, gray, and black. And you can see how the abstract quality of this particular place is maintained by that color scheme. Now, Keter has the quality and the function of being the portal, the doorway of creation. It's also called the will of God. That's where the location of the will to be can be found. It has no nameable qualities other than those. Chochmah, Sephira number 2, is called the Father, the male force. It's pure force, with no form, no word, no idea. Pure expansion. Pure fire. And Bina, the Sephira on the left, that makes the third corner of the triangle, is known as the Mother. The womb, the container, that takes all the force of the Father, all the force of fire, and gives it a shape. And the shape tends to be, or among other things, what is created in Bina, are the letters and the numbers, which haven't been made into anything yet. They're simply there. All the ways of describing the universe, remember we had talked about Sefer and Sefar, quantity and quality, text and number, all of those things can be found now in Bina. It's interesting that the way that happens is that the force of Chochmah, the sheer amazing power that comes crashing out of that location at the top of the right-hand side of the tree, cannot be handled all at once. So there's a phrase that they use to describe how Bina contains and controls and eventually succeeds in handling all that force, and it's called running and returning. Bina runs out, takes a little piece of the force that's coming out of Chochmah, runs back with it, looks at it from every conceivable angle, figures it out from every side, does everything necessary to grasp it and understand it, and kind of tucks it away. And then it runs out again and gets another little piece and runs back again with it and does that little thing again. Because Bina cannot contain that entire container all at once. It would be like standing under Niagara Falls with a bucket. You can't just stand there. So Bina contains the force of Chochmah a bit at a time. And it's done by this method of running and returning. And the method of running and returning is the first vibration of the universe, going back and forth between the right and the left-hand side of the tree, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, so rapidly that it can't be seen.
It's the first method of what?
The first vibration.
Vibration.
It's the first way in which the universe can be understood as an alternation between one side and the other side.
Well, this is Martha.
Yeah.
Were you talking about Bina, or were you talking about the connection between 2 and 3?
The connection between 2 and 3 is the pathway on which the running and returning takes place.
Got it. Okay.
Bina is the actual doer of that action. Okay, now we get to the middle triad. Remember, we haven't by any means exhausted this material. I'm just giving you a first taste of it. Now, the middle triad has a name also. But it's not as quite as settled a name as the supernal triad. It's oftentimes called the triad of the soul. It's the place of transcendence. It's where great beings can be found.
Where great what?
Great beings, like the Buddha, like Christ, like any saint, or great liberated, you know, human being or other being for that matter. Anyone, any creature, anything, any idea that has arrived at a state of liberation finds themselves in the middle triad. And just as the supernal triad was the triad of fire, this is the triad of water, which is an interesting one, because you'll notice that the supernal triad points upwards, and the middle triad points downwards, and you know, or possibly you know, that the alchemical sign for fire is an upward-pointing triangle, and the alchemical sign for water is a downward-pointing triangle, and fire and water are, of course, opposites. And here you have the first version of above and below. And you'll notice the way in which below is like above. The phrase, as above, so below, is first stated here. And the phrase, as above, so below, is actually visualized, it actually becomes a visible symbol as the six-pointed star,
yes,
in which the upward and downward pointing triangles are intermingled and fire and water are joined. You might say that the entire universe is composed of the activity of sexuality, of the balance and mixture, of fire and water, of mother and father, of force and form, and of above and below. So that symbol is an extremely potent one, the symbol of the six-pointed star. Now, the individual parts of the middle triad are called, first of all, chesed, on the right-hand side, and that is generally understood to be the place of love, generosity, and grace. Gevura, which is the Sephira on the left-hand side, is known as awe and might and terror. And just as Chesed is enormously expansive, it's the next lowest level of the outpouring of the love of God, so to speak. So Gevura is the container for that love, and it becomes the eye of a needle. So tiny, so contracted, so demanding, that only perfection manages to get through it. And then in the very center of the middle triad is Tiferet, which is the location of illumination and liberation and consciousness without ego. It's the place in which the awe and the love combine, where they fuse to light up the sky in the form of the sun.
Illumination and what?
Liberation and consciousness without ego. This is why this is considered to be the location of great beings, of saints and prophets, and those people among us who know what creation is made of.
Are you speaking of the second?
Of the second triad.
Triad?
The middle triad. That whole area of the middle triad is a location where that can be found. This is also called the solar triad because it's ruled by the sun. In this triad, you can find...
Can you say that again, please?
Yeah. This is the solar triad, S-O-L-A-R, solar,
okay,
as in sun, because it's ruled by the sun, and it's the place where the first colors can be found.
Then when you said it was the triad of the soul, you didn't mean S-O-U-L?
Yes, that's what I meant, S-O-U-L,
okay.
Triad of the soul, that's what I meant in that case, yes.
Okay.
The colors that can be found here are blue in Chesed, red in Gevura, and Tiferet is yellow. So you have the three primary colors out of which all the other colors come. You know, by the way, that blue is one end of the visible spectrum. red is the other end of the visible spectrum, and yellow is the center. I'm not
Which
sure.
Which one is yellow? Okay.
Yellow is Tiferet, the middle pillar.
Tiferet, okay.
Yeah. You may be aware that in China, the color yellow or gold, which is the center, is usually the emperor's color. It's the color of the great being who stands between heaven and earth. Just an interesting side note. Now we go down one step to the lower triad at the bottom of the tree. This is called the triad of nature. This is where you can find the four elements and all the aspects of the personality. This is the lunar triad, ruled by the moon. Remember that the moon is in Yesod. Just as the sun is in Tiferet, the moon is in Yesod, the middle pillar. And because this is the lunar triad, because this is the universe, the world under the moon, it's the realm of the goddess. It's the realm of the feminine energy. In this way, the perception of modern pagans that the world as we know it is a feminine world and ruled by feminine energy is quite correct. On the right-hand side of the lunar triad is Netzach, which is Venus. This is where you can find all the instincts, all the drives, and all the appetites. It's the fire in the belly. It's the furnace that keeps you alive. It's what makes you get up in the morning. It's what makes you fight to stay alive. It's the source and the location of the libido, the sexual instinct.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yep. Then we go to the left-hand side of the tree, just across from it, to Hud, number 8. This is the location of the intellect. It's the assemblage point where the whole world is put together. This is where the plan of things, the law of nature, all those formulas and perceptions of science that give us an understanding of the world that we come to see, all of that can be found in Hud. This is the container for the forces that come from the right-hand side. And just as Venus is hot, Mercury or Hud is cold. And then we find in the center of the tree that mildness that is the hallmark of the middle pillar in Yesod, which means foundation. Yesod is the location of imagination, of shape without substance, of the astral plane. Ghosts, demons reside here. Spirits, archetypes can be found here. But remember that nothing yet has become solid. That is the function of the final position on the tree, Malkut, kingdom. Another word for this place is sovereignty. Instead of kingdom, you could say kingship, the act of being king, the act of ruling. But it's very different than perhaps what you might think. This is the location of the state of sleep. This is where reality comes into existence, but it comes in the form of a dream. It's the field of action where all events and all their consequences occur. It's the stage of personal drama. This is where the ego is the star. This is where everything gets solid and real. It's the experience of being separate and vulnerable. Be aware that before this has happened, there have been no separate things, no separate objects, no separate people. And nothing has been vulnerable. It's all been quite divine. Now all of a sudden, each thing is given its own space, its own time, its own boundary, its own separate existence, and the possibility of arising and disappearing. Everything now has the possibility of dying, of ceasing to be. And so comes fear, and so comes the possibility of death, and so comes all the vulnerabilities that we're used to. This is the place where creation ends, where the act of creation ends, and the beginning of the movement of return to spirit begins. This is the place of sleeping and also of waking. There's one more place that we haven't spoken of that requires some attention. In between the supernal triad and the middle triad is an area that's called the abyss. A, B as in boy, Y, S, S, the abyss. It's the enormous, uncrossable space that exists between above and below. It's a very, very interesting place because in this place, the letters and the numbers that are created by Bina float without being together, without having made combinations yet, like vegetable soup, like, you know, like alphabet soup, where all the letters are just kind of floating in a random collection. They're swirling and floating and have not yet come together. In another tradition, this is called the Matrika Shakti. The Shakti is the creative energy, and Matrika is that portion of the creative energy which brings the letters and the numbers together into fertile combinations. Words and quantities are created, but not in the abyss. There, they're still floating free. They don't begin to make sense. Nothing begins to actually take shape until you get to Chesed, until you get to the world below. In the abyss, everything is potential. And it's a vast, vast space. It's so huge that they say that no one, under any circumstances, ever cross it. Now, in the middle of the abyss, you find that little faint circle that we haven't spoken of yet. And I'm going to give it a name. And if you wish, you can write it in, although it is not a sephira. It is called Dot. And it's spelled D as in David, A-A-T-H, D-A-A-T-H. And remember that a T-H is pronounced with as a hard T, so it's Dot. And Dot means knowledge. You may have heard or seen any number of places that three words are oftentimes said together: wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. Wisdom, when it's captured by understanding and fully grasped, becomes the luminous depth of knowledge.
That is knowledge, wisdom, and understanding?
No, just knowledge.
Okay.
The wisdom comes from Chokhmah.
Okay, thanks.
Bina is understanding. And when those two get together, when those two fuse, when the two of them are brought into a complete fertile harmony, they produce knowledge. So knowledge is the consequence of the perfect joining of wisdom and understanding. And that is a template for many, many things. That's a source of understanding for a lot of stuff. All force and all form eventually come together. When they're properly coming together, they come together as knowledge. When either the one or the other, when either force or form is too great, when there is no balance, knowledge can't be found. So there you have the triads of the tree. We had the three pillars, now you have the triads, and a whole bunch of more stuff has been added to make the tree become more alive for you. Now remember that I gave you the astrological attributions. You have the names in English. You have the numbers. Now you have all of these attributions given to each of these places. Instincts, drives, and appetites, intellect, imagination, the field of action, the state of sleep, the abstract template, the portal of creation, the father, the mother, force and form, love, generosity, and grace, awe, might, and terror, illumination, liberation. All of these things are now applied to and contained within the 10 numbers that make up the minor arcana. Having written all of these things down, when you've had a chance to look them over, you'll begin to see how absolutely magnificent the 10 numbers are and how full of stuff, how full of meaning they are. And this is where the meaning of tarot comes from. This is the root material. This is the matrix from which the meaning of tarot was drawn. When you look at a 5 or a 1 or a 10, be aware that this is what you're looking at. If you don't know these things, the meanings of the numbers are simply things you learn by rote. Somebody told you that they're true and you have no way of knowing why. Now you begin to see why, where it comes from, and what it's about. And you have a method of judging for yourself whether or not the meanings that are given to a number have any legitimacy. You have a standard for judgment. On that note, we'll go on to the very next subject. Actually, before we go on, I should ask you briefly if you have any questions or comments on this material.
This
anyone?
Is Gina, I do.
Uh-huh.
When you were mentioning about the pillars,
yeah,
it made me think of how it's a repetitive theme in tarot with pillars.
Absolutely. Those pillars are there precisely and exactly for that reason. When you see the pillars in the priestess, they're the left and the right pillars of the Tree of Life. That's precisely what you're looking at.
Okay.
When you look at the pillars in Justice, when you look at the pillars in the Hierophant, all those places, that's what you're looking at. That's what the pictures are referring to. And now you know what it's telling you.
Well, this is Debbie.
Uh-huh.
In the middle, the veil behind the High Priestess, that's the illumination?
The veil between them is actually a question of initiation. The idea is that before you can pass between those pillars, before you can get the knowledge that exists behind the two pillars, there is a whole initiatory process. And that initiatory process has to be gone through before you can get the knowledge that you're looking for. And that's on many, many levels. And by the way, the pillars also have, there are other places that material about the pillars is drawn from besides Kabbalah, but that what you're looking at mostly is the Kabbalistic material. Yes, be aware that the yellow coloring behind the pillars in Justice refers to the end of the path of Justice, which is Tiferet. That's a whole other story, and that deals with the pathways. Justice is a path, not a Sephira, and we haven't gotten there yet, but it's a good point. Anyone else?
I had a question earlier on when you were talking about the contraction.
Uh-huh.
And you had made a comment that when the three waves of intention contract three times, and then you got into something else. So my assumption was that meant that's where you've approached the boundaries? Or?
Yeah, what happens there is that in three successive waves of intention, it is said that the undefinable, the unimaginable, approaches the place where creation can begin. Why it's three and not five or seven or 12, I couldn't tell you. It's just that's the tradition. The reasons for these things actually go back to a literature that very few people have access to. At this point, it's probably only necessary that you be aware that the tradition is this rather than understanding the route by which it's arrived at, but that's what's going on. I think we actually need to go to the next stage. So let's do that, and we'll come back later for another period of discussion.